Yep, we're good.
We
good
can sync it.
afternoon. Today is June 19, 2017. We're opening up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Colleagues, we're Representative Doherty, which one are you here for?
I'm here for 712.
All right, let's open that one up first then. Is that all right? We're going to open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 712. Representative Doherty.
Thank you. Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm the state representative from House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And I'm here to very strongly speak in favor of Senate Bill 712A. And I think many of you are familiar with it, but basically what it is that with when OPSR, or Tier 3, was developed, the members that are Tier 3 recipients, which is anyone that was hired after 2003, not only do they have to work more years, but if you are injured on the job and injured gravely, very hard on the job, you do not get any service credit for the time that you are recovering. So, for example, we had Trooper Sitterberg, who was shot 12 times in Sherwood. We have a police or a firefighter, and they'll talk about this later, firefighter from Portland when they had the explosions in Northwest Portland that was blown across the street. In the year, in however long it's going to take for them to recover to get back on the job, they do not get service credit towards PERS or OPSERT. But if they were Tier 1 or Tier 2 employees, they would. And so this definitely was an oversight when Tier 3 was initiated, because there is no way that somebody who is injured that severely doing their job and serving the people should not have the service benefits that the people in Tier 1 and Tier 2 have. So that's why I'm really encouraging the Senate Bill 712 and hope that it is a unanimous passing of the bill, because it is a great one.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, any questions for the representative? We're good.
Thank you very much.
Co-chair, did you want to speak on Senate Bill 712?
I will speak to both, actually. If you want me to do 712 first.
Why don't we make life easy on you, and we'll open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 200, and you can come up and share your thoughts on both.
I maybe could use them to make it easier. This was my long, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate 19. I will not actually go through my four-page speech that I gave the policy committee, because I know this bill quite well. A long time ago, we approved a measure that allowed people in the uniformed services to buy at cost up to 4 years of credit for prior uniformed services into PERS. This only applies to the formula and not to money match. So they are basically buying additional years credit. They also have to pay the entire full cost to the system to do this. So it is actually, for most people, prohibitively costly to do this. Very few people take this option. But when we did that, we defined uniform services as only including those services that are commonly identified in the public as uniform services. And so we defined it as totally the military services that people would commonly identify. We actually have two other uniform services. The Commissioned Officers Corps for NOAA. I won't try to say what that acronym means, because I cannot pronounce one of the words very well. But I think everybody knows what NOAA is. And it's a very small corps of officers. It's probably, in my understanding, it's the officers that operate their fleet of various ships, which they are about the size of the Liechtenstein Navy. I don't think Liechtenstein has a Navy, because it's bound. But it's not a very large group. And then the public health, the Commissioned Officers Corps for the U.S. Public Health Service, which are the people that respond to things like Katrina, Rita, and actually were one of the few armed services, or uniformed services, I should say, that actually was involved in the Aboy crisis and actually sent officers to Liberia to deal with that, and were actually in all reality putting their lives on the line also. What this would simply do is clearly define what I think some of us thought we were doing, applying this to the uniformed services. It did not. Actually, this change that we made back, I think, more than a dozen years ago, only applied to the armed services. If you were to look at some of the testimony from the policy committee, you would see three letters there from various parties within NOAA and within actually the Public Health Service explaining the details to you. I have one constituent that's impacted by this that has come to me for the last 8 years about this. And I have said I was looking for a non-controversial PERS bill to put this in. That has never really happened. Then he interested my state representative in the northern part of my district, Representative Leiniger. So we decided to just put this bill forward to let it be considered. It came to you with unanimous recommendation out of the policy committee after they considered it. Basically, all of these bills were held up because of the overall discussion on PERS measures, and most of them are considered very technical in nature and only impact a few people. The second bill that you are considering, I can't remember the exact number, it's SB 712, is it? Came about because of what was explained to you by Representative Doherty. And some of these are very tragic cases, and the reality here is if you are Tier 1 or Tier 2, and you're injured in the line of duty. In fact, if you're at the point where you are basically potentially not going to live, but it's going to take 2 to 3 years to rehabilitate you, and as the example that's been cited in some of the testimony, you have been injured so severely, well, I'll just say it out plainly, you've been shot so many times that it's going to take you probably a couple of years to probably re-enter active service as a public safety officer. Under Tier 1 or Tier 2, you would have received the credit for that service in terms of years of service. Again, this does not relate to money match. This only relates to formula. And people believe that's really unfair because, in particularly the case of law enforcement officers, when they're putting their life on the line, what this basically means is they would lose a year or a couple years of credit. Doesn't affect money match again. It's simply that should they actually get the credit, even though they're not actually for much of that time, they're not going to be earning their salary, to be honest. They will be reduced to some level of disability temporarily. They'll have their salary for a period of time. But really, should they be deprived of that service when they came as close as you practically can come to of giving the ultimate sacrifice for the work that they do? Both bills are good bills. I think they both deserve your support. They are not going to have any significant fiscal impact on the system. I did not actually put my name on either bill. I used committee bills in both cases. Some of you know this, some of you do not. But in 2013, Representative Buckley and I had the, the notoriety of being the chief sponsors of the reform measures in 2013, and our names are on the bill. Me putting my name on a PERS bill automatically creates an issue with a bill, even when it should not, because anybody that sees my name on a PERS bill now literally tries to look for what's in it that's going to hurt them. So I did not want to do that because these are technical bills. I have supported PERS reforms bills. I honestly believe the system is in need of some additional reform. I believe something that perhaps all of you don't, but I've been doing this now for 21 years, and I've been through two different periods of broad reform in PERS, and I think the underlying reality is with the decisions that have been made about PERS, our potential ability to address some of the legacy costs are quite limited in terms, and we may just have to live with that fact. I consider our PERS liability to be just about as close as you can get to debt service. It's not something you can walk away from. It's a true liability. And so, but these are just small bills impacting only a few people, where they should, because of our broad discussion of PERS, they should not be damaged simply because we can't discuss PERS and very limited bills that really have no fiscal impact, or in case of the law enforcement officers, given in particular how close they've come in some cases to giving the ultimate sacrifice, we should not damage them or their families simply because we made an error when we created OpServe in the final months. Not an error in creating OpServe, I want to highlight that, because OpServe saved a lot of resources, to be quite honest, and is still a relatively decent public retirement system. But we should not actually move back from doing things that are technical changes simply because we cannot agree on PERS reforms.
Thank you very much. Representative Gumberg, then Senator Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just wanted to thank the Senator for looking out for the uniformed services. They may not be large, particularly as large as some of our armed services are, but here in Oregon, they're all in my district, and we're darn pleased with the work that they're doing and the role that they play. We stole them from Washington Square, fair and square, and we're darn pleased to have them here.
Representative Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I just want to clarify something from your testimony, Senator Devlin. And that is, in the instance of the tragic shooting of Trooper Cederberg on Christmas Eve, his family has discussed some of these issues with me. This bill would bring him relief, would it not?
It would in the sense of, I believe it would in the sense of him getting credit for his lost time in service. It probably would not entirely, and you'd have to ask someone with a better background than I would, because when a law enforcement officer gets into this kind of situation, they're not really necessarily always made whole during their time of recovery.
Follow up, please. His recovery is going to be of long duration and very complicated, and anything we can do, given how close he came to making the ultimate sacrifice on that Christmas Eve, anything we can do to assist this unusual cohort of folks that do an awful lot for Oregonians would be something I'd be very supportive of.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be an unanswerable question, but how come it's taken so long to fix this? It's been 14 years on the disability issue.
I think, to be honest, each time we go through a period of PERS reforms, we have to get to a certain level. I mean, each one of those, I could tell you, prior to 2003, there was a buildup of issues. And so it took a lot to get to that point. And once you take those actions, then it appears to be that people, I'll just talk about human behavior. People want to avoid the issue for a while. And then when we did the reforms in 2013, it's a similar issue. I mean, can I give you an idea? I'm going to get myself in trouble, but I don't care. When we did the reforms in 2013, we had this full support of the leadership in the legislature on the Democratic side. We had the support of the governor. We literally had the Attorney General staff literally on speed dial. We spent months and months trying to determine what we could do. And basically all of the legal advice that we got, which we felt was in a sense untainted, because there was legal advice out there, and I don't want to disparage any legal advice that's out there, but there was legal advice out there from the proponents and legal advice from the of the opponents. And both of those were largely from the standpoint of their client's position. So we tended to listen to the Attorney General's legal advice most closely. I mean, the proponents said we could do practically anything, and the opponents said we could do practically nothing. Well, in the end, the Supreme Court decided not that we could do nothing, because most people don't realize this. Although they threw out the vast majority of the savings in the current amortization period, which is 20 years, they basically did apply the new maximum in retirement COLAs to all newly earned benefits and all new employees. So while employees previously, for previous service, were guaranteed at least a 2% COLA, or if it was under that, they actually had a credit that would accrue. So in some cases where the COLA was less than that, it would come back to their account. Now every state employee that we have that continues in service will only get up to a maximum of 1.25 COLA for the remaining period of service, and obviously all new employees will get a maximum of 1.25 COLA per year. That is probably one of the lowest COLAs in any public employee's retirement system in the nation. However, there is an exception to that. And I get in trouble every time I talk about an exception. Some of the systems actually give employees the choice of whether to have a retirement system with a COLA, and some, or to have one with a COLA. If you, in Washington, under the, some of their systems, if you choose to have one with a COLA, you get a lower retirement to pay for the COLA in the long term. If you choose not to have a COLA, you get a higher retirement. But for an actual COLA, it's one of the lowest in the nation for a public employee's retirement system. And it is current law, and the Supreme Court has upheld that change.
Great. Any other questions, Representative?
Thank you, Co-Chair. I have a really basic question that I'm sure you can help me understand. The buyout or the buy-in provision notes that the purchase of retirement credits has to cover the full cost of those credits, mm-hmm. even the processing. So how is this leveraged by the member? What's the advantage to making such a purchase?
To most people, there is no advantage, to be honest, because I remember discussing this with one of the former directors of the Department of Veterans Affairs, that after this law had been in place for a number of years, that very few people took opportunity of it. Because in some cases, back then and even now, to buy 4 years of credit, which is for a regular employee under Tier 1, would be 1.67 times 4. So a little bit under 7% would require you to make a payment of $60,000-$70,000, and if that does not normally pencil out very well, because in many cases you're only actually having a true financial benefit to that if you live longer than about 14 to 17 years after. So people are having to make relatively large payments. It's sort of like a few people make a very bad decision sometimes. Financial decision, and they leave public employment and they cash out their accounts. Those that did that during the 70s and came back to public employment probably are shooting themselves now, because actually if you cashed it out, and let's say you had $10,000 in that account in the 1970s, if you'd left it in that account would be worth a small fortune by now. But if, and to actually buy that credit back would cost you a much larger even percentage. You'd have to buy back all of the earnings that those dollars would have had under law ever since the time you took them out. And you can only buy that back when you retire. So very few people probably choose to do that also. Where this does help in some cases, which I don't think is a bad thing, is where, particularly on the law enforcement side, when somebody just decides after a certain period of service that they literally no longer want to be a law enforcement officer, and they were in the military prior to that, or mostly in the military, they decide to buy out a few years so that they can basically retire, because perhaps they just don't want to be a law enforcement officer anymore. But very, very few people, and I think PERS will testify to that, ever take advantage of this program.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator. All righty. Bob, did you want to testify on Senate Bill 712? Welcome.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Bob Livingston. I'm with the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I do think that specific to Senate Bill 712, the good representative as well as the good senator have told you a little bit about the bill. What I do want to emphasize and perhaps provide to you is that if you haven't had time during the policy side of this bill, go back and listen to some of the testimony, and particularly in light of testimony from Senior Trooper Nick Cederberg, as noted, who was shot multiple times in the line of duty and clearly saved lives that day, as well as there's also an audio tape from Lieutenant St. John, who was the lieutenant that on the Northwest gas explosion was the one that made the decision to quickly evacuate the buildings, saving countless lives. But unfortunately, in that situation, he was literally blown back 200 feet, knocked unconscious. And in both these instances, both of these individuals will have long recovery times. The only problem that they had is they happened to be officer members as firefighters and police officers and not Tier 1 and Tier 2. And so while both these are on the job, clearly on the job injuries, we are hopefully going to be blessed with both of them being able to return to work. Right now, the only thing without this bill that they realize is that they not only have a increased retirement age because they're officer members, a lower benefit under the formula, and without this bill, they would have to work longer because they don't realize the service credit time while both of them are continuing to work really hard to get back. So while certainly I'm biased as a 25-year veteran of the fire service and over 20 years in this building, one of the reasons why this bill has taken so long is simply because of the difficulties and some of the politicization of the pension systems here in Oregon. And so with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have on Senate Bill 712 and would really appreciate this committee moving this bill forward.
Any questions, colleagues? Any comments? Bob, we appreciate it. And please send our best to your brothers and sisters who serve and help us every day.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
All right. Last chance for anyone who wants to share a thought during the public hearing. Going once, going twice. All right. We're going to close the public hearings on Senate Bill 200 and Senate Bill 712. We're going to open up a work session, colleagues, on Senate Bill 200. John, can you give us a summary of Senate Bill 200?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 200 expands eligibility for members of the public employees retirement system to purchase retirement credit to any person who entered or reentered active service in uniformed services after January 1st, 1950, or who was in active service in uniformed service on January 1st, 1950, defines uniformed services, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. And there is no amendment, Mr. Co-Chair. Members of the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair?
I move Senate Bill 200 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Co-Chair moves Senate Bill 200 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Any comments on this? Is there any opposition? Let it be noted that Representative Nierman is opposed. Any others? Seeing none, so approved. Would you like to carry this one? All right, Senator Manning, you've got this one in full. You want to carry it on the House floor?
Absolutely.
You get Senator Manning, you've got it on the Senate floor?
Yes.
Yep, okay. We're good. Yep, I was watching John. We're good?
Yes.
All right. So, colleagues, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 200. We're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 712. John, can you give us a brief summary?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 712 modifies formula for calculating hours of service credit for the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan member for membership for vesting purposes and retirement credit by including time that member received workers' compensation disability payments in certain circumstances, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage, and there is no amendment to the measure. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 712 to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair moves Senate Bill 712 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any comments on this, colleagues? Any opposition? Seeing none, so approved. Senator Johnson, will you take this to full committee?
May I respectfully defer to Senator Chair Manning?
I'll take both of them.
All right, you got Chair Manning. You're going to take this in full committee and Senate floor?
Yes.
Would you take this? Okay. Good representative will take it on to the House floor. Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to be rude and point. I apologize. All right. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 712. Colleagues, our agenda is done for the day. John, anything we need to be thinking about?
No, Mr. Co-Chair.
All righty. Michael, are we good?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Colleagues, we're adjourned for the day. Thank you.
Questions, shall I walk there?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Questions, shall I walk there?
Yeah.